Today on The Grave Talks, DIY Pandemic Paranormal Investigation. A conversation with Vinnie Carbone. Vinnie Carbone has been a paranormal investigator for several years. In a time and place during the COVID-19 pandemic where investigators and exorcists are not able to visit a home, has paranormal activity increased? Are the spirits more active now than in other recent points in history? Today, we discuss this and more on The Grave Talks.
Well, I think there's several ways to answer that.
Yeah.
For one, as a paranormal consumer, meaning someone who watches paranormal shows or studies this topic, I think naturally, unless they have a job where they are a frontline worker or, you know, someone that has to be out of the house every day, I think now more than ever, they're going to be consuming this content, whether it be TV shows or just articles or anything, you know, books, anything mm-hmm. that's in order online, your podcast. So that's one way. I think it's going to naturally pique another interest in it. I think from this perspective of an investigator such as myself, it really has put a dampen on actually getting out there and investigating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the last couple of months, I have done a little bit of traveling back upstate New York and around here in New York City, and just getting into locations is damn near impossible now, and understandably so. You know, so many precautions that have to be taken, of course, with sanitizing everything. So it's just because at a certain point they just say, you know what, we just got to stay closed.
Sure.
Let's see what else. As far as
in terms of like the activity of what's going on out there. Do you feel, obviously, like these are what we're talking about there, what you had just mentioned, kind of escapism, people just trying to take a break from reality, and ghost stories happen to be less scary than reality right now in many cases. And investigators having difficulty getting out there. Those are all things that, of course, affect us, the living, and how we're dealing and coping. But what's your thoughts? What are your feelings on the actual activity itself that's going on out there, whether or not it can be investigated or not? Are we seeing, and this is just an opinion, but I'm curious because I've heard many people say different things about this. So I'm curious on your take. Are we seeing an increase in activities out there in haunted locations? Are we seeing a decrease? Are we seeing an increase simply because more people are staying put in specific locations for longer periods of time, which then in turn allows them to experience more than they normally would? What are your thoughts on it from that angle?
Right. I think we might see an increase in activity simply because we are being physically forced to stay in one location. So if you happen to live in a haunted location, obviously you're going to be spending more hours in your home. You're going to notice that more. That also being said, I do believe that when it comes to intelligent hauntings, that being hauntings that directly interact with requests of the investigator or try to interact with the people, the living people in that location, you might see a decrease in that because I would say that they would thrive on interaction, on someone trying to make direct contact with them. And when that's not happening, that kind of will fade away for a little bit. In my experience, working at a historic, haunted mansion, when we would move furniture from room to room or take it out of a room, after a couple of months of that room being empty, we would actually start to see a decrease in activity. So there might be some correlation there.
Yeah, it's just such an interesting topic right now with, okay, how does this affect that world? This is another question I have, and it's almost kind of like, this is our how-to portion of the program, but it's an interesting one because the inability right now of many people to get out of their homes or to go and investigate or to do more so than investigation, but people going out and actively trying to help people rid their homes of whatever activity is troubling them beyond just the investigation. And yes, we have something here, but you want it gone. So we're going to bring in X person and that person's going to do this or that. When that's kind of out of the equation for many people right now, and they're sitting there more than they would in a home. And I'm sure there's somebody listening to this right now that's in that situation going, what the hell? You know, I used to hear that, you know, people would line up to come and look at this, and then you got to try and decipher who's viable or not. What can someone do who's in their home? And obviously it's situational to the depth of what is going on. But someone who's having something going on in their home that they believe is paranormal, is troubling them, hearing things, seeing things. We'll keep it at that. Obviously, it can get pretty deep from there. What can one do within their own powers if there's no one there to call? There's no investigators that can come out. There's no mediums. There's no people who can help anything, you know, transfer on or move to another side. You're kind of stuck with your own means. What advice would you have for anyone who's feeling that right now?
Well, there's a few very simple things that they can do off the bat. Number one is realize and remember that it's your house now. That doesn't mean you have to be disrespectful, but it just means that in a very respectful and peaceful way, you can acknowledge and you can, you know, share with them however you choose to do so. That this is your home, that you acknowledge that they exist, that they are valid, that they were there, but now their time has come and gone, and now your time to be there and make it a home has come. So that's number one. Just remember that you're not intruding. You have every right to be there as much as they did when it was their time. Secondly, most importantly, I think, do not play with a Ouija board. And Tony, you know, I know you're a big advocate for Ouija awareness and safety. But I would say don't do that. That's like giving a loaded gun to a child. It has a lot of potential harm. Someone who knows what they're doing with it, maybe, but I would say just the average person, don't touch it. Just don't even explore that. Okay. And lastly, in the absence of a trained veteran investigator coming in and trying to take stock of what's going on here, I would say do your own research. You know, go online, read a lot. Maybe don't subscribe to everything that you see on TV, on these shows as the truth or how to conduct an investigation. But I would say, definitely try to learn about what you're dealing with, you know, and take it from there. And then in doing that, in learning and reading different articles and stuff like that, you're going to see what's comfortable, what's organic, and what's comfortable for you. I'd say that if you do those three things, you might be okay. You're gonna start to have an easier existence in that location, if it is a hostile and haunted, which,
sure,
you know, my experience is that most times it's not. It's just, you know, you're experiencing these things and say, hey, you know, I kind of want to understand this a little bit more.
If it's a hostile type haunting, essentially, are all those rules out the window, or all those best practices kind of out the window?
I'd say still maintain with trying to learn, do not use a Ouija, and, you know, respect and understand that it's now your home. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have to get a little tough with it, I'd say. I'd say don't threaten, don't antagonize, but just say, hey, you know, it's enough's enough. You could do a couple EVP sessions to try to understand who you're talking to, if you get any responses. Set up some cameras if you got them, see where the hot spots in the location are. But just, it's going to be a whole lot of trial and error.
Is there, there's a couple of things I want to unpack there that you just said. Let's go back to the first one before we get ahead of ourselves. Validating their existence. I mean, that to me has been one of the most surprising things I've heard over the years on this show. But I believe it. of just simply saying, hey, look, I know you're here. I'm here, too. This is my house now. We can live together peacefully, but please don't freak me out or freak my kids out or whatever. And quite right. often that works, surprisingly, but it does. But there are cases where sometimes you hear the idea of, well, validating their existence can at times then increase the activity, no matter what your request is of, hey, let's keep it, you know, on the down low. Sometimes it's like, oh, they can see and hear me. I don't care that they don't want to, but I'm going to stick around and make myself known. Is there any risk in going down that path of saying, yeah, I know you're here? Or, you know, I mean, it's probably more of a game of percentages. And if you're trying to just, you know, do your best of how to handle this alone right now, what's your thoughts on those risks there?
Well, what I always say is that we often forget that ghosts are the remnants of human beings, and human beings are not one-dimensional creatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for whatever their personality may have been in life, it's going to be reflected in that in depth. So, you know, it depends on who you're dealing with. If you are dealing with someone who just wants acknowledgement and then they can move on, that's fine. If you're dealing with someone who, you know, loves attention, then they might stick around a little. It really is a matter, like you said, of percentages. It kind of goes back to this thing that I've heard at lectures and stuff like that, where people will ask, well, how do you get rid of a ghost? And my first question is, well, you know, why do you want to get rid of a ghost? Now, granted, not everyone wants to live in a haunted house, and I don't know if I necessarily would want to live in a haunted house. But there's this idea that ghosts are like insects, that if you have them, you have to try to get rid of them. And it's interesting as to why we want to do that. But that's a whole other topic we can get onto.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing of it is that, to be perfectly honest, in my opinion, I don't really know if you can get rid of a ghost until they're ready. You know, they might need validation. They might need that acknowledgement. They might need that someone to say, hey, you're dead. It's over. Get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so... I don't know if there's one surefire way that you do steps 1, 2, 3, and then they're going to be gone. I think it's, if it's something you, if you feel the need to really rid your home of a spirit, it may not be as easy as Hollywood, or the books make it seem like, but there's certainly, as we said, there's certainly things you can do to, one, become comfortable with the idea, and then two, possibly begin the process of vacating them.
Could we be entering a time period here where a lot of people are going to try and do their own DIY on this? And I mean, everyone at some point when they get into the paranormal, if they go into the world of investigating, is going to be new to it. Oftentimes, yeah. Though, in the past, they would have had groups they could get into and learn from others. Of course, online, you can learn, too. It doesn't completely isolate you from it, but there is something certainly to be said about true real world experience versus watching videos or just reading up on things or being part of a thread on a Facebook group. Are we setting ourselves up? Are we going to be in a place here once the pandemic has calmed itself down to an area where things are kind of semblance back to what we used to know as normal or whatever our new normal is, where people are able to go out again, where people have done so many bad practices or incorrect practices that there's going to be investigators really walking into stuff that really would have been a simple, okay, here's some solutions, but because it was stirred up incorrectly with someone inadvertently not knowing what they were doing, made things far worse than it needed to be. Is that going to be an issue, you think?
Unfortunately, I do think that that's a very strong possibility. And I think that that goes across the board for, you know, a lot of different hobbies, topics,
sure.
Vocations. And that's because, quite simply, we've never before lived in a society with access and proximity to technology and to social media and to literature. And that's, you know, it's a double-edged sword. So, you know, you're going to have people who are very into a topic and they're going to give it a shot. You know, it's And then, you know, some will be successful and safe and respectful with it, and some will be reckless.
Mm-hmm.
The hope is that those who are reckless won't last long, right? So, but, you know, like I said, I do think it's a good thing, because now people often say, well, how do you become a ghost hunter? And they think that you have to go to like the Vatican, or you have to go to like, you know, live in the forest for a couple of years and study with some, you know, with some doctor and something like that. And the truth is, you really don't.
Sure.
If you just do some reading, get some equipment online, get permission to, you know, actually go into a location that has had some experiences, and you go in there and you do it the right way, guess what? You're an investigator.
Yeah.
You know, so it's easy enough to do, but it's not easy to do it the right way, if that makes sense.
It does. I mean, and it's an interesting point you made. We've never lived in a world with this level of information. But at the same time, in modern society, we've never lived in a world with this much information and lack of access to human beings to to execute or carry out those who have the knowledge, you know, or the expertise in certain areas. That other part of the equation has always been a part of it. The information's been there, so have the people. But to not have only have access to one part of it is something that it's uncharted territory. You talked about, obviously, don't use a Ouija, but there are many other communication or investigative devices out there that one could easily go down the rabbit hole of if they're doing their own at-home research and they're trying to do their own at-home investigation and they're going to take things into their own hands. Are there risks that are involved with other devices that communicate with the dead that are just as risky in opening up a doorway as one would view a Ouija board is?
In my experience, no.
Okay.
I would say, you know, there are things that I would say avoid simply because I don't think that they are legitimate, you know. There's some very archaic methods of investigating. Ouija actually being one of them. It's very old-fashioned. Seances being another, again, that's, you know, it's very rare you're going to find someone who actually knows how to conduct one of those. But then you're going to have things such as like dowsing rods, which, you know, if I could physically show you, I could show you how to debunk them pretty quickly. But dowsing rods are often, you'll see on investigations, but it's meant to show or indicate the spirit responding to your questions. But quite simply, it's a matter of how you're holding them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how they move, because it's a, you know, it's a bent piece of metal. And if you notice, the handle always has like a shaft, so that when it, you know, if you turn your wrist one way or the other, just the slightest, you know, where it bends, it becomes a fulcrum and it just turns,
mm-hmm.
it just moves. And so, you know, all of a sudden you get people thinking that's a ghost responding, but meanwhile, it's just a piece of metal moving in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I am inclined to use electronic based equipment, K2 meters, EMF detectors, REM pods, vibration detectors, digital voice recorders, flashlights, obviously. But I haven't really reached out to using equipment that I can explain how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And often I like to use equipment that wasn't necessarily made for ghost hunting specifically. The model in which I use is, you know, probably is made for ghost hunting, but its origins were not in paranormal investigating. They were used for something else or to detect something else. So I would probably try to avoid things that, you know, you have to just take at face value what the manufacturer is saying, like, oh, this is a voice, an echo box, or this is a spirit box that, you know, you're going to hear a ghost voice. Well, how do I know that's not just white noise or frequency? I mean, you know, Tony, you worked in radio, so you know that there's all kinds of wacky things that can happen with radio waves.
Sure.
But it's not to say it's a ghost, though.
Yeah, I mean, where I get hung up sometimes is on the concept of, okay, a Ouija board is opening up a doorway. It's opening up a line of communication to go back and forth. What is different between the Ouija board opening up the line of communication versus any other device that you are saying, use this from the other side to communicate, whether that be a device where it's a flashlight of some sort that, and I'm horrible at names of devices because I don't investigate, but like where it changes, you know, light up the blue light or the green light, and then it manipulates it to specific areas. And we can understand how that works because we can understand how a battery connection works and things of that nature, how, in fact, it's choosing to light up specific ones at specific times on demand. That obviously is the ununderstood part, other than it's doing it. But the fact that it's communicating through that, what exactly is the difference? Or even into an EVP, you're like, here's the device, here's where I want you to come through. What is theoretically the difference or in risk versus of doing something like that in a more modern day piece of equipment versus an archaic Ouija board where the planchette is moving around and your hands are moving it as, and you're basically the antenna, if you will? How is a tape recorder? How is the flashlight? How are things like that not essentially the same thing, but they just don't have an alphabet that you're using?
That's a great question. I've never heard that before. I would say, I would think it'd be the intention of the device, right? I think with a Ouija board, the idea is come and play with us and stay.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the devices that we use, it's, I just want to see if you're even here kind of thing. Beyond that, I really don't have a much better explanation. I'm not going to pretend that I do.
Sure. No, I'm curious because, I mean, that's a question I pose out there sometimes, and I never really get a great, you know, in-depth, here's a definitive reason why they're different. And obviously, all of this is conjecture and it's opinion, but it's something I wonder about because, in my mind, it's pretty close to the same thing, but maybe it's the depth at which one can go and the other is not. Like, one is essentially text messaging versus, you know, video chat. I don't know. You know, one, you're going to get a lot more options for communication. One is not. I don't know. One's the local area network. One is the World Wide Web. I don't know.
Well, what I've always said when it comes to Ouija boards is, and the truth is, I in my life have never used a Ouija board. I've investigated all over the country and have been able to do some really cool things. But I've never actually used a Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, why is because either it's going to open up a portal that I'm not equipped to deal with and I'm not ready to deal with, or it's total BS.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't got time for that I'm trying to make myself a legitimate investigator. You know, I'm not going to use something that you could use at a sleepover when you're in junior high school.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So that's why I've just avoided it altogether. I'd rather use scientific equipment than this thing that you could get at a toy store, essentially. That being said, a Ouija board, you know, you can make one on your own.
Mm-hmm.
It's the intention of how the device is used.
Yeah. If someone goes into this and they're actually sitting here going, this is helpful, this is interesting, this is really kind of the information I've been looking for as I'm stuck here at home in quarantine and there's weird shit going on around my house that I would like to call someone to come over, but they can't right now. But I have access to Amazon or whatnot. What would you say to someone who wants to try and at least validate? Because I think that's usually step number one. Validate, you're not crazy. There are things happening here. Maybe there you can't have other people over right now unless there's someone in your household that already is, you know, there that can help validate it. But there's many who don't. You know, they're by themselves, and they're wanting to go and especially right now. I mean, more than ever, I think a lot of people begin to kind of question their sanity with everything that's going on. What would you recommend for someone, like specifically, if they said, you know what, I got, you know, $100, $200. I want to do something with this. I want to validate that I'm not crazy, and I want to go to Amazon and I want to try to get something that is going to give me at least some validation, maybe not eradicate it, maybe not, you know, solve all the issues of what this is, how this is, but just kind of try and get some clear answer, maybe some sort of communication that proves they're not crazy. There's something going on here, but at the same time, not stir things up. What would you tell someone to try and do or try and get?
Well, I'd say you could get three simple pieces of equipment. You could get a K2 meter, also known as an EMF detector, and that's going to measure the EMF in your location, the electronic magnetic fields. This is one of the things I was saying earlier, that was not made originally for ghost hunting. It was made for plumbers and electricians to look for faulty wires and walls when they start, you know, working at a house. Why we use this is it's because it's believed that spirits manipulate and use electricity in order to manifest, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have this device on a computer, it's got a couple of like plastic dots at the top of it. It looks like a remote control. And the higher the EMF that it's exposed to, the more dots are lit up. So typically it'll start at green. That's how you know it's on. And then I'll go from like green, yellow, orange to red, and red being the highest level of EMF.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to put this device on top of a computer, it's theoretically should go to red. If you were to put it on top of a rock, it should be at green. Now, it's really interesting when you're in a location and you've had it on and, you know, you're talking and then you start saying names, dates, people that live there, events that happened at that location, and it starts to spike. Well, now I'm not saying that's necessarily a ghost just walking into the room, but now you're starting to see something that's different from what you've been seeing for the last 10 minutes, right? So theoretically, if there was low EMF in that location, it should be low the entire time. If there was naturally high EMF for whatever reason, it should be spiking the entire time. It shouldn't be going back and forth, you know, anytime you mention a certain name, date, or event, right?
Sure.
So you could get a K2 meter, also known as an EMF detector. You could get one of those. You could get a REM pod, which detects static electricity. It's a black, typically they're black, they're like circular black with a red top, and then they have an antenna, and they have, again, they have these bulbs on the top. And basically, the closer you get to the antenna, it will activate the device, and it will give off a high-pitched tone. And the closer you get, the higher pitch it will get to indicate that something is getting closer to that. Simply, you know, obviously, if it's in the middle of the room and it starts to activate and there's nothing around there, well, then, again, not saying that's a ghost, but it's saying that there's something that is activating that at that moment. The last piece of device that you can get, which you may already have, is a simple voice recorder on your phone, or you can get a digital voice recorder to do EVP sessions. EVP, electronic voice phenomena, is basically, it's any sounds, voice, scream, anything that you hear on the recording but did not hear in real time.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Vinnie Carbone. In part two, what are some of the mistakes to avoid using various investigative equipment in the DIY fashion, which many are doing right now? Some say and believe ghosts are like insects. If you have them, you have to get rid of them. Why is that? And is it true? Is there a way for an online exorcism to be effective during a pandemic? What are some of the biggest misconceptions about paranormal investigators when they are, in fact, in the field and investigating? Are there ever certain areas of homes that tend to be more haunted than others? And do malevolent entities use our natural fear of darkness, the basement and attic, to make that fear more intense? And does having paranormal activity in these areas increase the likelihood of it being just that, a negative entity? All of that and more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Sign up to become one on our website at thegravetalks.com or directly at patreon.com/thegravetalks. $5 a month gets you access to all of our bonus material, including advanced episodes of the show weeks before they're released to the general public. So your way of getting extras and our way of keeping the show on the air. We greatly, greatly appreciate that support. Without it, we would not exist. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.